All right, everybody, thank you for coming. This is Heather, and I would...
Heather, you have a microphone.
She's on it.
Hello? Are we on? All right, thank you. I always have trouble with these mics. So I just want to welcome you guys all. Thank you so much for coming. We have assembled an amazing team of the best AT specialists and trainers in the state. We have a variety of topics that we're going to cover today. And then we will open it up to a question and answer session at the end. So just to quickly introduce our team, we have Naomi Namakata from WATAP. We have Al Yardley, who you all know. We have Deb Cook-Lewis, who you all know as well. And, of course, Reginald George from DSB, AT specialists. So we're going to go ahead and get started with Naomi.
Well, thanks for the wonderful introduction, Heather. Can everyone hear me okay? Okay, great. So I'm going to talk about, I don't know what's up with that feedback. I'm going to talk about smart home speakers. I'm going to compare Echo and the Google Home, and I made some recordings for you all because I didn't want to rely on them working here. But quickly, I just wanted to talk about WATAP and the services we provide to all Washington State residents. Make some noise if you... I don't know what that's from. Okay. Is there another another microphone I can use? I'm going to grab another mic. Hold on. Okay, hopefully this will be better because that was... Anyway, can you make some noise if you are familiar with WATAP and the services we provide? Oh, good. So quite a few of you. So just very quickly, we are the Washington Assistive Technology Act program, and an AT Act program exists and is mandated by the federal government for every state. Our mission is to provide AT resources and expertise to all Washington State residents with disabilities to aid in making decisions and obtaining the technology and related services for employment, education, and independent living. So we have free demonstrations and free or low-cost 3 to 5 week AT device loans. And the goal of the lending program, the loan program, is so that you have an opportunity to try something out before you actually make a decision around purchasing it. We can ship the devices anywhere in the state, and we provide a return shipping label as well. Some of you may know Scott Kanan. He manages our loan program, so he is the person to talk to about any device that you'd want to borrow. Our website is watap.org, and you can actually go online and directly borrow equipment through the online portal. We do some consultations, AT evaluations, and individual trainings, and those our set rate is $125 per hour. And we, of course, do these kinds of presentations and trainings for outreach. We also manage the I Can Connect program for the state, which is the National Deafblind Equipment Distribution Program. And that program is funded by the FCC and provides individuals with both significant vision and hearing loss with free equipment and training for distance communication. So it's a great program if you qualify. The eligibility requirements are significant combined vision and hearing loss, verified by a doctor or professional, or if you have a progressive condition in either of those areas, you would also qualify. The financial eligibility criteria is household income and within 400% of the federal poverty level. So for 2019, a single person household would be $49,960 and under, two persons $67,640 and under, and the amount increases as your household number increases. So if you have any questions about that, know of anyone who would benefit from those services, please contact us and let us know. Our email is www.watap.org. I'm sorry, that's our website. Our email is watap, WATAP, at UW.edu. UW.edu. Yes. Okay, so moving on to smart speakers. Make some noise if you have a smart speaker in your home. Great. Okay, make some noise if you have an Echo device. How about any Google Home devices? Oh, good. So we have quite a bit of both. So today I thought I would talk about some of the common features and do a comparison between the two devices. A lot of people have questions about which might be better for them, for their personal use. So in general, with the smart speaker market, you know, we have the Echo products and the Google Home products. There's also the Apple Pod and some other devices that I'm not going to talk about today. The most popular ones are the Google Home and the Echoes. About 26% of the U.S. adult population use smart speakers now. And the top 10 use cases are to ask a question, listen to music, check the weather, set a timer, listen to radio, set an alarm, listen to news or sports, play a game or trivia, and find a recipe. Some of the other features that I think are very helpful are to make a hands-free phone call. You can control your smart home devices, access calendars, and also purchase something. So I'll do some comparisons of these two devices. The Echo versus the Google Home, some basic information, which you guys are probably pretty familiar. So the Echo is the name of the actual hardware, the speaker, and Alexa is the voice assistant, which runs on the Echo devices. The Google Home is the hardware, and the Google Assistant is the assistant that runs on the Google devices. Google Assistant also runs on the Android phones, so you're going to see it in different areas. There's some TVs that have Google Assistant built in as well. So, and the wake words, which are the words that you use to get the device to listen to your command. With the Echo devices, you can program either Alexa or Echo. I think you can also do computer, but most people say that that's kind of challenging because you might say the word computer more often than either of those other. With the Google devices, you say either Hey Google or OK Google. With both devices, there's a lot of variety in hardware. You know, the prices range from $40 for a small speaker with, you know, not great sound output, but decent for a smaller room, or you can go all the way up to $200 plus for ones that have a nice big screen on them. Some of them have much better sound quality, so if you're not using other Bluetooth speakers connected to it and you want to listen to a lot of music, then you might consider the bigger ones. So for both devices, you need to install the apps for the devices on a smartphone or tablet. So Google requires that you have a Google account and you download and install the Google Home app. And Alexa requires an Amazon account and the Amazon app. In general, I would say, in terms of the app user interface, the Alexa app is much easier to navigate and use. It's a little more logically set up, in my opinion. The Google Home app it's kind of complicated to find the settings and kind of navigate through the menu for the different more advanced settings for each device that you might have connected to your account. And both apps seem to work pretty well with VoiceOver. I don't know if other people on the panel have opinions about that, but... Okay, so Debbie says the Google Home app is better than the Alexa app. Okay, so with voices, everyone is probably pretty familiar with the Alexa voice. It's a female voice. You can change the accent, so there's other English-speaking regions. I read that if you change Alexa to a British accent, it's actually harder for her to understand what you're saying unless you're speaking to her in a British accent. Yes. So your child who's obsessed with Peppa the Pig might do a better job at communicating with your Echo device with the British accent. But anyway, Peppa is a British pig. That's very popular. My four-year-old son says, hello. So Google has actually 8 different voices, male and female. There's also British and Australian accents. And I have found that for individuals with hearing loss who have a hard time hearing higher-pitched voices, the Google Home is much more effective for them to use because they can hear some of the male voices. So I recorded some of the voices from the Google Home, and I am asking what time it is, and it's obviously not the time that it is now. So I'll go ahead and play that for you so you can kind of hear the variety. Hey Google, what time is it?
It's 9:43.
Hey Google, what time is it?
9:43.
Hey Google, what time is it?
It's 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 9:43.
Hey Google, what time is it?
The time is 9:43.
Yeah, so can anyone guess who that last voice was? It's John Legend. So he does, you can set it up to have John Legend talk to you, but it's not always consistent. So in some cases, you get the standard Google female voice. So, but it's kind of cool. So moving on to questions. Google tends to be better at answering random questions. You know, it kind of makes sense because Google owns the Google search engine, and so it has a lot of power behind searching the web for information. So I asked what WhatsApp was to both Google and Echo, and we can listen to what it came up with. So I'll play the Echo one first.
Echo, what is the Washington Assistive Technology Act program?
Here's something I found on Wikipedia. Assistive technology acts provide federal funding from the U.S. Department of Education to each state and territory to support state efforts to improve the provision of assistive technology to individuals.
Echo, what is the Washington Assistive Technology Act?
Okay, so it kind of got it right. It went to the General AT Act Wikipedia page, so you have some basic information. So this is what Google found.
Hey Google, what is the Washington Assistive Technology Act program?
On the website WATOP.org, they say, the mission of Washington Assistive Technology Act program is to provide a comprehensive continuum of services and resources to help Washingtonians.
Okay, so obviously that is a much better answer because it's very specific. So it does a better job. So another area where you might ask Google or Alexa about something specific, like, you know, what's the best shampoo or what's the whatever, and the information, if available for Echo, always draws from Amazon, from the Amazon store reviews and things like that. Whereas Google, you're going to get a variety of different search engines it finds, it looks for the result for. So let's see what happens here.
Echo, what is the best sparkling water?
One moment. Showing the top results for sparkling water. A top-rated choice for sparkling water on Amazon is 365 Everyday Value Sparkling Water Ginger, 12 fluid ounces.
And then for Google.
Hey Google, what is the best shampoo?
I found a list on the website reviews.com. The 5 best shampoos. OUAI Repair Shampoo, best for normal to dry hair.
So, you know, depending on where you want to source your information, that might also impact which device you use. How many people use reminders on their? Okay, great. Great. So reminders are, you know, great to remember to take medication, things like that. Both devices allow you to make reoccurring reminders, so you can do every Monday you're going to do something at a certain time. Bless you. You can do monthly or annually, so even for a birthday or something like that, you can set a reoccurring reminder. How many use their devices for calendaring?
Yes.
Okay, so some people. So Echo can create, modify, and delete calendar events.
Echo, add event to my calendar for Friday.
Sure. For what time?
11 a.m.
And what's the name of the event?
Technology presentation.
That's technology presentation on Friday, October 25th at 11 a.m., right?
Yes.
Okay, I've added that.
Echo, what's on my calendar?
Your next event is on Friday, October 25th at 11 a.m., there's technology presentation.
Echo, delete technology presentation from my calendar.
Delete technology presentation at 11 a.m. on Friday, October 25th, right?
Yes.
I've deleted that.
Yeah. It's my avatar. I'm not, yes, I'm virtually here. I'm just kidding. Yeah, so if you have whatever calendar you have set for your Alexa app, it'll show up on. So say it's your Gmail calendar, it'll come up on your Gmail app. Or if you use it with your iPhone calendar, your Gmail calendars with your iPhone calendar, then it'll show up there too. So Google, turns out, you can only create calendar events. If you want to delete or modify the event, you actually have to go into the calendar on a different device. The one thing that Google has that Echo doesn't, which may be a benefit for individuals who have multiple users of the device in their home, is that Google has something called Voice Match. And so with the device, when you set it up with a specific account, you create a voice profile to access that account. So anything that you think of that would be associated with your Google or Gmail account, like your contacts, your calendars, those kinds of things are all kind of secured by your voice. So I have my voice obviously set up for this Google Home, and I had Scott go in and try and add something to the calendar.
Okay, Google,
add a doctor's appointment to my calendar on October 31st at 10 a.m.
I couldn't verify your voice, so I can't add anything to your calendar. You can either try again or verify your voice match settings in the Google Home app.
It doesn't like it.
So, you know, for if you have multiple people, you can actually set up multiple accounts on a single device, so you can add to your own calendar, call your own contacts, and things like that. So I am running out of time here, but I just want to quickly go over skills versus actions. A lot of people might use skills on their Echo device, and basically these are kind of like apps within the Alexa environment that you can install or choose to use. So Echo has about 70,000 skills right now. And you can go through in the skills section of your your Alexa app and actually choose the different skills. There are a lot of skills that are not great, though. And so this is a word of warning. You know, you might use something and you realize that it actually works pretty poorly, and then you have to delete them. There's a lot of reviews, and so you can read those and find out which ones are effective. Some of the popular skills are sleep sounds, calling an Uber, find my iPhone. Also, a lot of the smart home devices require that you use their skill associated with it to control whatever that is, like your light bulb or your blinds or whatever. With Google, they use something called Actions, and that's sort of mainly kind of geared towards the actual developers who create devices that work with Google. You don't install Actions. There's only 4,000 Actions right now, and they just exist out there for you to use. So the benefit of that is you don't have to go through the extra effort of installing something, but then again, you also don't know what actually is working with it. So, you know, pros and cons there. Let's see, both devices you can shop with. So obviously with the Echo devices, you add things to your shopping cart, to your Amazon account. Google uses Google Shopping, which you actually have to go in and access online in order to complete your order. Again, because of the voice match security with the Google Home device, you can only add items to your own cart. Finally, there's some new features out there that people might find interesting. On the Echo, there's something called Show and Tell, which you may have heard about in the news. But basically, if you have an Echo Show, which actually has a screen and a camera on it, you can hold up something to the camera and say, "What am I holding?" And it will actually identify it for you. So it does a pretty, well, I would say it does an okay job. Some things work and some things don't. Usually you have more success with things that have a barcode on them compared to just, you know, a random mug that you're holding up. It also does not necessarily recognize all the text, so I tried holding up a business card to see if that would work, and it did not read that. Google has something cool called the interpreter mode. So if you are with someone who speaks a different language, you can actually turn on interpreter mode with Google and have it interpret in whatever language. So if you have a Japanese speaker, for example, you can tell Google to interpret Japanese to English, and whatever the person's saying in Japanese will be Google will say in English, and then vice versa. So you can kind of have a conversation with someone using the Google Home device. All right. Thank you, everyone. And
all right. I'm going to move along really quickly here because I want everybody to be able to give their presentations. We have so much to do. So I am going to actually move to the iOS presentation now. And that will be a combination of Deb and Reggie, so I'm just going to pass it that way.
Well, good morning, everybody. And so I'm going to keep my comments very brief. If you want to talk more about some of these things and you come to the and you're signed up for the individual help session, we can do some demos and things. My interest in the world is both iOS and Android, and they have both had major upgrades lately. What I'll tell you is if you are me and you have both, your Android device has just suddenly been looking a lot better, because I'm not fond of iOS 13 too much. But there are some wonderful new features, and those are working. It's some of the old standbys that kind of quit on us.
Yeah.
So if you haven't upgraded and your phone hasn't done that accidentally to you and you want some help to make sure you don't, we can help you do that. Because it can be prevented, and I'm always sorry when I hear somebody say, oh, my phone updated on me and I didn't mean for that to happen. Well, you didn't take the preliminary steps to ensure it would not. So you have to send a memo to Apple. But basically, iOS 13 has a number of wonderful new features, my favorite of which is the shortcuts. How many of you in iOS 12, or actually in 13, I guess, have used shortcuts so far? Oh, more of you than, oh, good. All right. So basically, in iOS 12, the shortcuts app was a separate app that you downloaded, and so you had to try to incorporate them in. It was a little awkward. Now they have completely integrated it with the operating system, and that makes this feature much more powerful. One of the things that I was going to bring today, and I honestly just forgot, so I'll try to do a demonstration on Frank's Tech Call sometime or something, but there is a, there you can use shortcuts with all the built-in apps, but you can, it's also a very powerful feature with external apps, and recently, an individual turned me on to a kitchen scale, you know, a weight scale for food that would be great to be using to weigh your food and would work with the phone. But the problem is the app is not accessible at all, and you couldn't find, you know, your results or get any settings made or anything. But the developer agreed to support shortcuts, and with the shortcuts, you can fully operate the scale. And you can get the weights of your food, and you can have it add weights to the food, and you can do everything that you should need to be able to do. There are some other features about looking up foods or, you know, that showing it barcodes or something, which we haven't worked with, but all of the weighing features work. So most apps have some flexibility about their shortcuts, and there are usually suggested shortcuts in the settings of the app that you can enable and then use your voice or other things to get those to activate. So the first shortcut I ever made was really simple. I had a product that was a Bluetooth product that would not connect up properly. And when I, to get it to reconnect, I needed to turn Bluetooth on and off, and I needed to turn VoiceOver on and off, and I needed to do them really close together without digging in all the settings. So I just created a new shortcut that did that, and it basically went in, and you can specify all the actions that you want it to take. So there are millions of shortcuts that are pre-built, and you can just download them, but in this case, nobody had done this. So basically, I just went in and taught it that it needed to turn off Bluetooth, turn off VoiceOver, and turn on VoiceOver just at my tapping one item on my home screen, because I didn't want to have to talk about it to Siri. So I think those are great. The other thing I've done on my phone that's fun is I am really an Android user, and I have all the Google products on my iPhone, and I can get my Hey Google to come up on my iPhone the same way you get your Hey Siri to come up. So that's with shortcuts. It's a very powerful tool, and if you haven't explored it, I absolutely encourage you to do so, because you can automate many tasks, and especially if you hate wandering around on your phone looking for things, it really can be very, very helpful. And there are lots of people who like making them, so if you have trouble kind of logicking that through, your friends will think it's a game, and they will help you do it. So I'm going to let Reg talk about a couple of features as well here.
Is that a utility?
Yes.
Okay. Forgive me, because I'm losing my voice today. I just wanted to mention command mode, which is something that you can find in VoiceOver settings. And for those of you that have had trouble in the past getting the rotor to work to get to the screens, oh my gosh, the different VoiceOver settings, or to get to your home button on the newer phones, it's very easy to go in there and set up a two-finger swipe right to get to home, for example, since that gesture is not used, or a two-finger swipe left to get to the rotor. And those gestures actually show up in VoiceOver Help. If you set them up, and the old gestures work, but it will tell you, you know, what the gesture does. And I just think that's really good.
Oh, that's cool.
Naomi, I was curious how you recorded your demos, and also if you could speak to email on the Echo and the Google Home.
Sure. I used the Voice Memo app, actually, to record the demos, and then I just inserted them into the PowerPoint presentation, and I was able to select them as I was going along through the PowerPoint so you could hear them. The one thing that it doesn't do well is allow you to stop them. So I had to actually move to the next slide and come back in order to get them to stop talking in the middle if I didn't want to listen to the whole thing. Email support is non-existent on the Google Home devices. So you can ask Google to read you emails and it'll say nothing. The Echo device, it seems like it will only read your new messages to you, so you can't, you know, go back and look at other messages. And I haven't really played around with actually replying to an email. Debbie, do you know if that's...
Yeah, if you do it right then, just the same as you would like in the Messages app, you can hear the email and reply now.
You can hear the email and reply now in the same way that you can reply to a message. But if you come back later, again, you can't get access to any history of it. So you have to do it right in the here and now.
Hey, everybody. It's nice to be here. This is my seventh convention. I've been able to come in and just meet some of my old students and shake some new hands. So happy for the privilege to come and just do a little bit of presentation this morning. I just wanted to cover a couple of things that I've actually just kind of learned about. And I don't know how many of you need magnification with speech, but I don't know. I haven't for a long time gone in and looked at magnifier, the Windows magnifier and the Windows narrator. But if you haven't done that and you need magnification with speech or just speech, check those two brand new features out. I mean, they've been with Microsoft forever, but the improvements over the last couple of years are huge. And finally, there's going to be some competition for Freedom Scientific or Vespero. Because if you look at Narrator right now, what you're going to see is the JAWS laptop layout now being used in Narrator. And they mention specifically, when you open up Narrator, they tell you, hey, Narrator kind of models some previous screen readers that you might be using in the past. And so making the transition from what Freedom Scientific might have been used to Narrator is going to be really a snap. And the magnifier transitions really good with the Narrator as well. So what you see on the screen, if you have the vision to support it, what you see on the screen is actually what you also hear. So those two programs, I'm just tickled pink to see how good there are now an option for you to use. If you don't have another screen reader or magnification program out there that you're using, or maybe it's becoming obsolete because of the change in Windows, my goodness, go in and check out Narrator and check out Magnifier. Now, I will tell you, I've got the hotkeys for both the Narrator and the Magnifier. If you want a copy of those, just make sure I get your email address. I'm happy to send that to you. The same goes for the voice commands for the iPhone. If you need those commands, I've got them all printed out all in a Word document that I can email you as well. So anyway, for heck's sake, if you need magnification with speech or if you just need speech, go check out Narrator and Magnifier, because the improvements they made there, oh my gosh, it's the difference between night and day. I wouldn't even talk to them 5 years ago, or five years ago I wouldn't have talked about them. They are now worth talking about, and they're definitely worth checking into because they are super.
Yeah,
I was just shocked when I saw how good they worked together. And I used it on the email, I used it on the internet, and they've even mirrored the hotkeys that you grew up with JAWS on the internet as well for your one-letter hotkey navigation around HTML pages. So for heck's sake, check that out if you don't have a screen reader or magnifier that supports you right now. Because
there are huge mouse pointers also available.
Yeah. The other thing I just wanted to mention, how many people are still at Windows 7? Well, gosh, not very many. Well, just a few. I just wanted to say the system requirements for Windows 10 and Windows 7 are exactly the same. So if you're concerned whether your machine can handle Windows 10, I can tell you already it can do that, because if you look at the system requirements, they match up exactly. So don't let the fact that you're concerned about a system requirement stop you from moving up to Windows 10. The other thing is, you might think you missed the window of a free Windows 10 download. You haven't. As a matter of fact, what you should do is call the Microsoft Accessibility Desk, tell them what you're dealing with, and they will help walk you through a free download for Windows 10. So, I mean, just wanted to share those two pieces of information. Thanks again.
Okay, so we have about 5 minutes for questions.
Raise your hand if you have a question. Well, hang on. Let me get your microphone.
Hello? Can people hear me?
Yep.
Okay. My question is about Echo and Alexa and all those guys. There's supposed to be an app coming out that will help diabetics measure their blood sugar. And I wondered if you knew about any of those apps and how they relate.
I did hear that they're working on something like that, but I actually don't know what.
It's this microphone.
Sorry, but I don't know actually how it looks and how accurate it is, so I can't recommend it. Anything to monitor your blood sugar levels with the Echo devices. Yeah, there are some talking. Okay. So it looks like there's some more questions. You guys raise your hands really high. There's a couple of people in the front, and there's not two wireless mics, so otherwise I would drag this one over for people.
I got you. Oh, I see you.
We are going to email information from this session to everyone.
Cool. Can someone speak to what the difference is between the new voice control features in iOS 13 and what is added to that from Siri? We have a chapter member that basically does everything with her voice and I had just recommended a new phone for her that can do iOS 13, but I haven't gotten a chance to play with the voice control.
I'll start this, and then Reg may want to contribute to it as well. First of all, the voice control features in iOS 13 were not really designed for blind people. They were, and it's important to remember when you think about the limitations of them. So it's not that you're not welcome to use it, but it's actually really, really designed for people who can see but who can't use their hands. So the most efficient way to use that feature is to let the system put a number grid on your screen that won't be voiceover accessible and call out the numbers of the places you want it to go, and then it's quickest. But basically, you can control most of the features of iOS 13 using your voice. If you kind of experiment with it a little bit, there is a whole set of commands that you will see when you go into the help, when you're setting up that feature, that the, all of the commands that are possible are there. And so there is the ability to do much more, whereas you used to be able to dictate texts and you dictate phone numbers and, you know, open apps, and those kinds of things have been there for a long time. But now you can actually move the pointer. You can. There are also some special commands for VoiceOver, so you can move VoiceOver right, and that would make VoiceOver read something. But I'm not sure in its current iteration it's the most efficient for blind people. So if the person is low vision, it may work better for them because if they can also see it. But it's a little challenging. The big thing you need to know about voice control in the positive is that it does allow voice control, and it's quite thorough. The big thing in the negative is it is a huge battery drain. So if you are going to use it and go out and about with it, I really recommend turning it off unless you actually need it. Now, one of the great Siri, shortcuts, we talked about shortcuts already, would be to have voice control turn on and off, and you can set that up so that you could turn it on the fly and use it and then turn it back off again. And
well,
you could,
it does.
And you could definitely do that.
Siri knows.
And Siri does know, yes. So you can do that, and that will help. But I have to tell you that if you're really going to depend on voice control, then you'll find that your battery life, even on the very newest phones, is pretty well shot. So that's an area that needs, I think, some more development. But the population it is specifically designed for are people who don't have the dexterity to use the phone. And they will readily tell you that while VoiceOver doesn't inhibit it, it's also really advisable to use it with headphones if you are using it with VoiceOver, because it does a pretty good job of not picking up VoiceOver, but it doesn't do a perfect job of that. So I would say use it with caution. It's not a feature that was the blind in mind kind of Apple feature, and Apple will tell you that straight up. Anything you want to add to that, Rand?
Sure. I was able to tell it open Bard, press play, have it start my book, tell it VoiceOver magic tap to stop it, or VoiceOver read to read my email. Swipe right, repeat 3 times. If you know the name of the button, you can tell it to press that button. I've never used the number grid. I do think it's fascinating. You can tell it to delete a line or a word, or there's just a lot of things that work really well, and it's only going to get better.
Yeah, it's really great for editing. I will say that it is a very cool feature for editing. And if you don't turn it on for anything else, I just was dictating a message over here quickly to Cindy, because we're doing a little logistics, and because there was a lot of you clapping or something, Siri missed my word and didn't get the right word. And I just flipped on voice control and said, delete that, because it wasn't looking for the word that. It understood to delete the last thing I wrote. And then I turned voice control back off, and then I finished, doing it. So, normally when you're doing dictation on the iPhone, you really can't edit it. You're either going to send it or no. So we put up with a lot of missed words. Just, sorry about that, it's going to be those words. But you'll get the gist, right? Hopefully. So we've all sent or received some rather peculiar dictated messages, right? So you can, if you're sort of, OCD about this, which my sister says is really CDO, because you want to get it right. But anyway, if you are a little bit, obsessive about getting those dictations right, this is a very powerful feature for that. Yeah, and on the Mac, this has also been implemented on the Mac, and it's just stellar on the Mac. It actually works really well on the Mac, and so I highly recommend the Mac for that.
So I have a quick question about Windows 10. I'm at work. I'm stuck with Windows 7. Hate them. Mm-hmm. And so I've been trying to get my company to agree to upgrade to Windows 10, but I haven't pushed too hard because the software I was using doesn't read medical words correctly, and it's not trainable. Is the Windows 10 narration trainable so I could tell it to pronounce arthroscopy correctly rather than misreading it to me? No idea. We don't know if I can add words to a dictionary and train it.
So are you using, well, you know, if I mean, JAWS is totally trainable.
I don't use JAWS.
Okay. What are you using?
All right. I work at Northwest Hospital. I'm still working as a nurse.
Yeah.
They originally got me Zoom Text.
Right.
When it was time for Zoom Text to update, Zoom Text decided to try to charge Northwest Hospital $2,500 for just me as an institutional fee. And so then I said, well, Zoom Text wasn't, and we didn't have JAWS at the time, just the reader that was within Zoom Text. And they wanted us to buy like this whole big suite of stuff, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, Zoom Text has annoyed me so much with the reading, I don't let it read to me anymore. So we now, I just now use Supernova, which is also not trainable. But if the Windows 10 narration is trainable, then I can convince them to finally allow me to upgrade to Windows 10 because I have a powerful computer that keeps popping up and telling me that my hardware and software are mismatched to begin with.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but it's a fairly long process to get that done. But yeah, narrator, all of the screen readers, with probably the exception of Supernova, are to some level do have pronunciation dictionaries. That's what you're talking about.
All right. Well, we have actually run out of time. Unfortunately, we could do a whole another hour of just questions. But I know y'all have to get to your lunch. Thank you so much, everybody. Give this a round of applause. And as Reggie said, we will be sending out an email with resources for you.
I think it's an official word from Jeff Bishop that narrator does not have a pronunciation.
He doesn't have what?
A pronunciation.
But NVDA does.
NVDA does.
Yeah.
That's funny,
and that's free.